You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.
Welcome to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome. I am Dr. Michelle. I'm your host on Dr. Michelle Live. We'll walk on this road together. 5734BREAD4. 5734BREAD4. Now, you can also email me, dmlive@breadboxmedia.com. You can get online and get the app on iTunes. That is really one of the best ways to go because you just have it right there. You can use it in your car. You can use it anywhere you are while you're walking. It's really a great way to not only listen to Breadbox Media, but also to you could log into to podcasts, previous podcasts, just all kinds of things. So we are walking this road together every single day, Monday through Friday. I'm so happy to be with you. I'm so happy that you're with me. We help each other. We help each other. So what are we going to talk about today? Well, I'm thinking that a good thing that comes up a lot, is depression. And because depression is something that is so looked at, talked at, seen, dealt with, but also experienced, that would be a good time to perhaps, especially as we're going into the summer months, perhaps talk a little bit about depression. Now, there are many, many different kinds of depression. They come from different places. So I'm going to just rattle off only a few. But what I want to do is I wanted you to understand that whatever you are experiencing right now, if you say, maybe I'm depressed or I am depressed or could I be depressed? There are certain things that, like I always say, it's a spectrum. There's certain things you can point to and say, yeah, that's depression. There's other things you can point to and say, probably not. But how do we know what, when and how to do something about it? Well, oftentimes it's not an either or. It is usually an all the above. It's a both and. If you are in a place where you might feel like, you know, really, I don't think there's much wrong, but everyone around you is saying, you know, there's something wrong that you just don't get out, or there's something wrong that you used to like be interested in certain things, or you're sleeping differently than you used to. Those kinds of things, or you start looking and thinking, you know, I really don't care much about how I look or about how my clothing is or whether I even bathe today or not. These are all nice little signposts saying might want to at least look at the possibility that depression might be something you're experiencing. Then there's the feeling of depression, the feeling of feeling down most days, all day long, for at least 2 weeks. That's kind of the classic period, classic definition of major depression. You just have that feeling and you just can't seem to get out of it. Now, oftentimes, oddly, it's worse in the morning and gets better in the afternoon. However, I've seen a lot of depressed people with true clinical depression where it is better in the morning and worse in the afternoon. So there's all kinds of variance. And because you experience sad feelings, bad feelings, doesn't mean you're depressed. So now that's about as vague can get. But that tells you what we're dealing with. Because again, things of the personality, things of the mind, things of the feeling part of yourself, those things are very difficult to know when is this actually something that is in the realm of a medical treatment? When is this something that that you really are experiencing and it really is a danger sign? And again, always, always, always start with the medical as well, because there are low thyroid issues that sometimes take a long time to ferret out, long time to see. They don't just, there's not a really, there's one nice general test, but it misses a lot of thyroid problems. So thyroid disorder is one that can really, really across the board, it tends to cause depression. So even if you're slightly hypothyroid, that means low thyroid, which means you have a high TSH. That's too complicated right now to go into how it sounds counterintuitive that when you have something really low, you have something really high. But the thyroid stimulating hormone is like, it's trying to stimulate the hormone. It's going, okay, come on, thyroid. And the thyroid's going, no, I don't think so. No. I'm not feeling it. I'm not going to do it. I'm not doing it. And thyroids are the master gland. I mean, they're a gland. They're not an organ. They're a gland, but it is like the master gland. Because when that goes out, so many things go out, regulate so many different things. So could also be hormones, could be perimenopausal. Many, many things can cause this feeling of depression. Now, I also want to say diabetes, Parkinson's, any medications. And, you know, those of you who are in like allergy capitals of the United States, allergy medications can cause depression. I used to have a very young patient, 16 years old, when I was a general practitioner, who got depressed if she took ibuprofen. So never think that, you know, if you're starting to see a connection, even if someone scratches their head and says, you know, I don't really think there's much of a connection there, the medical world usually only goes with what it can reasonably look at as far as just data. So if something doesn't pop up a lot on typical side effects, doesn't mean you're not experiencing them. So again, if you're on anything, talk to your doctor. Don't just get off of it yourself, because it could be give you worse problems. So I would like to talk about mainly in this program, depression and diet. That's a really important thing. But first, you know, again, I want to drive home the fact that depression comes in many faces. It can masquerade under many titles. It can be the product of many, many, many things. Sometimes something as easy as changing your diet, although that can be very hard, can indeed help depression. And others can help ward off depression. And if you have a good diet, a good healthy diet with actually accessible nutrients, over time, you can actually change the course. You can change what's going on. So how do we navigate through this? How do we take it? How do we put it out on the table? How do we look at what we do and what we don't do? Because we hear Mediterranean diet. We hear paleo diet. We hear go only vegetarian. Don't go vegetarian. Go only high meat, high fat. Don't go high meat, high fat. Go high fish, but guess what? Fish has tons of mercury. So, you know, it's enough to make your head spin, because it all sounds great, but when you put it in a practical reality, you're going to go to Kroger's or Ralph's or whatever Safeway, whatever grocery store you go to, Albertsons, doesn't matter. You're going to go Walmart, and you're going to usually pick out the same stuff you always pick out. You're going to pick out, if you're a meat eater, you're going to pick out some kind of meat prepared in the way that you tend to like it and your family tends to like it. You're going to take out certain cereals, certain fruits and vegetables, and you may not understand. You might look at a list and say, you know, I'm pretty much there. I know what I'm doing here. I'm kind of doing the same thing. So what happens is, you might be getting the same items, but you may not be actually getting the same nutrients. So not all eggs are created equally. Not all meats are created equally. Not all vegetables are created equally. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. So it sounds completely overwhelming, like I put too much on your plate. It's completely overwhelming, but it really isn't. What I want to also have you have as an umbrella for this whole thing, or actually just something to keep in the forefront of your being, is that your mouth and your chewing mechanism, not only is it very important, because you start absorbing nutrients in your mouth the minute you take a bite of anything. So if that's not functioning properly, if it's too dry, if you have medicines that make it dry, if you have other issues going on, that can change how you actually begin the absorption process of your nutrients. But at the same time, it's also a direct link to your brain in the way that, have you ever noticed, and I want you to start noticing this, that sometimes you can have one bite of something and start to feel mentally foggy. And you might not even notice it, might put it together, and then you talk yourself out of it saying, well, how in the world can I have reacted to that food when I haven't even stopped chewing it yet? Well, the answer is yes, you can. Just like, how do we figure out what's poison, what's not poison, what smells like we should eat it, what smells like we shouldn't eat it, through our noses. So they're giving powerful messages to your brain before any item of food touches your lips. How often have you gone to the refrigerator, gotten some good whole grain bread, not even thinking, and you're putting something down, you're sticking some peanut butter on it or something, making a sandwich, and then you bring it up to your, or making toast maybe, and you somehow you have a little whiff of something and think, wow, what's that? And then you smell it closer, and it's still very faint, but then you look in the package of bread and you find out that it's green and moldy. That was your being telling you, your smells, your center, your olfactory center, something's wrong with this bread. And it's probably saved you a lot of times from getting sick, throwing up, doing whatever. So when you put a bite of food in your mouth and you all of a sudden kind of feel a little foggy or a little depressed even, that's a real thing. There are entire schools of thought even around that is actually telling you what you should do, what you shouldn't do as far as food goes. So even though this is just a lot to dump out on your plate, we are going to organize it a little bit on the other side of the break and look at depression and diet and what you can do. Stay with me. We'll see you on the other side of the break.
You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.
Welcome back to Dr. Michelle Live. Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle, and you're with me today on Dr. Michelle Live. 573-4-BREAD-4, 573-4-BREAD-4. We're talking today about depression, and we're going to focus mainly on diet and depression. And that's something you can begin now. You can begin to look at. And I'm going to keep hopefully every segment here, I'm going to keep reminding you many reasons why people experience depression. And I only named like three, and there's like hundreds. It's from medications that you're taking that actually cause depression. There's nutrients. You don't have to be deficient in nutrients. You could just not be getting the right nutrients or not absorbing the right nutrients. And there can be reasons for that too. People have celiac disease. People have all kinds of other diseases. Now, one thing I want to also mention too, I'm throwing into the mix, there's even thought that the constant drinking of regular tap water that has chlorine in it to help against bacteria, that actually kills off, because chlorine does that. I mean, all you have to do is put chlorine in a coffee cup that has mold on it, and the mold will be gone, and probably the color of the coffee will change. It's a very powerful, powerful anti-mold, anti-fungus, anti-germ. It's a really amazing killer liquid. That's why we have it in our water in a very tiny amount. But over a period of many years, in a lifetime, you can wipe out the flora in your gut. And there's certain things in your gut you must have, because some vitamins, even some of the B vitamins, are actually manufactured by the little critters that are living in your gut, by the bacteria in your gut, and you don't want those to go away. Also, as any of you have ever experienced, when you take an antibiotic, and that's just, again, against bacteria, then you notice that you get vaginal yeast infections, you can get mouth yeast infections, you can get your stomach all completely messed up. That's why it will produce diarrhea in your kids, and you have to be really careful. So these things do tend to really throw the body off. Same with any kind of medical procedure. And when you take, also when you take a certain, if you take a mega vitamins or you start taking specific vitamins, they sometimes will throw you into an imbalance because you're getting too much of one, which causes the whole body system to try to regulate itself. And then you have a what's called a relative depletion of another nutrient. So let's say you're taking, let me back up. Some of the water soluble vitamins like C's and B's, those are a little less problematic. However, when you take things like, let's say you take a lot of calcium, well, you will have a relative, because it must remain in balance with your magnesium and your phosphorus to have it do its job for your bones. So let's say you're just taking a huge calcium supplement, you can become relatively deficient in magnesium or phosphorus, even though if you were to be tested, there would be no problem. You wouldn't see a deficiency, but you've had created a relative deficiency because you need the balance. And so if you've got, let's say I'm just making this up. We'll put it in terms of blocks. Let's say you're supposed to have 25 blocks of calcium and 25 blocks of magnesium. And that is what you need to have in order for those blocks, along with all these other things that would make up 100%. That is what you're supposed to have for your, for good bones. And let's say you're taking something that causes you to have 50 blocks, and blocks is just blocks, it's not a medical term, 50 blocks of calcium, and you're still only having your 25 blocks of magnesium. Then what happens? Think about it. You just have much more calcium. So apparently you have a little bit of a deficit there if you think of them in blocks. So you have both of them are level at one level, like little building blocks. But if you start building up the calcium, then your magnesium blocks are at a lower level. So you see what I'm getting at? There's so many different intricacies, but we're also very rugged beings. And so we tend to try to right our wrongs every single day. So what can we do with food? And what's the right food? Well, first of all, everyone has different thoughts and theories about food. We know some things, though. Even people who do not care whether someone's a vegan or a vegetarian or eats meat, it is known scientifically that there are a lot of deficits in purely vegan people and purely vegan vegetarian people, because especially with the vitamin B's, vitamin B12, even though if you really are judicious about your diet and how you're putting it together, you can get vitamin B12. It's in meat. That's how we get it. We are carnivores, and we're omnivores. So we were created to eat everything, like it or not. We were. So what do we do? All right. There's no special diet that is proven to relieve depression. So let's get that out on the table. There's no special diet that is proven that if I give you this diet, you will have relief of your symptoms. Just like if you look at it, there's no pill that's actually going to do that for you either, or we wouldn't need all those different pills for depression. So what you need to know is that certain foods and diets will not instantly put you in a better mood, although some do. But it can be an overall treatment, an overall overhaul of your mental health. So let's look at it this way. As before the break, I was talking about how your mouth, you start with your mouth, and how your mouth is not only the place where you're starting to absorb nutrients right away, your mouth is also going to be your warning system. There are people who can take a spoonful of peanut butter and put it in their mouth, and they just feel kind of bad. And I don't feel sick. It just kind of makes them feel foggy or a little bit depressed. I mean, they report this. So if it happens to you, you don't have to know all the reasons. You can if you want. But the reality is, if it happens to you, then yeah, you're telling yourself something. Then don't eat it. Even if someone said it's healthy, don't eat it. Now, it doesn't mean that you don't have to get used to certain kinds of eating. Let's say you just don't like the taste. That's different. Some people actually report a difference in their mood. So what's a healthy diet? Well, we talk a lot about the paleo diet these days, and there are some things about it I don't necessarily subscribe to. The conclusions that man ate a certain way in the beginning of mankind, and now we need to eat like that again, because for one, the way things grew wherever they grew at a time 100,000 years ago, I'm sure that with all the millions and billions of people that have traversed the earth since then, all the animals that have eaten the foods since then, all the radiation and the bombs and the disrupting of the earth and pesticides and all these kinds of things that have gone on in all these years, you're just not going to grow the same thing. You're going to grow. Plus, the weather patterns have changed so much. So maybe a berry 100,000 years ago is a whole lot different as far as a little nutrient package than a berry today, because we have different soils. We have different things that died. We don't have woolly mammoths that die in our ground, you know? So you have to look at the whole picture. The whole picture. What made up the ground that grew it? What made up the rain? When the rain came, what was in the rain? Did it have all these pesticides and pollutant particles in it? What did it have? Where was it going? Were there glaciers all over the place? How did that all fit in? We all know that you can take a tomato and put it in the ground and rob it of certain nutrients, or put a dye in the ground, and it's going to soak it up and it's going to take in what comes in through its roots. So you have to think about those things too. We can't just go, yeah, you know, I get it. And I don't know how many of you do this, but I don't do this. Get up and get up in the same clothes that I fell asleep on the bare ground with, and gather up my children at the cave front and start stabbing grubs, or have my man go out and bring home some raw meat that he just killed. So we don't do those things anymore. I don't go out with my little satchel or whatever carrying device I have, or a basket that I wove, and collect berries of the day, the berries that are right there that morning. Nope, I don't do that. So does that change the nutrient structure of the farm-raised beef I'm going to get in my local grocery store that was butchered weeks and weeks ago and shipped across the country in trucks? Yeah, I think it is. I really think it is. Just like they know that the nutrients in a grass-fed wild animal are different than even a grass-fed domesticated animal. So keep that appreciation in mind. So let's get back to what that means for you and how you're going to deal with some of this stuff. So I want to get into a little bit about the Mediterranean diet. Mediterranean diet is something that you can just get the concept and why it's so good to you. Because we're going to talk about eating diets that are high in nutrients. What are the essential antioxidants that you might need? What kind of carbs are good and bad? What kind of protein boosts your alertness rather than bringing it down? And different vitamins that you may not be getting enough of. All this will help your mental health. I'm Dr. Michelle. We will see you on the other side of the break.
About you, but I kind of like that.
You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.
Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. I am your host, Dr. Michelle. You're walking with me today on Dr. Michelle Live. 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4. You can text, you can call, you can email me, DM live at breadboxmedia.com. You can go to our website, breadboxmedia.com. You can also get the app, get the iTunes app, and you can listen to this program and other podcasts from previous programs. Just scroll down Dr. Michelle Live and you will get them. So we're talking about depression and ways that your diet can affect you. So there's a lot of prelude today. And I want to get into some nitty gritty here, some things that may help you. So let me tell you, of course, some of this stuff should be, in my estimation, it should be a no-brainer. We shouldn't even have to think about it. We eat. It wasn't like think about everything you're eating, and we spend so much time creating diets and following diets and putting in lists and wiping everything right now, all this kind of food and getting in all that kind of food and then throwing all that out and getting yet a whole other. We just go crazy. I don't think we were really intended to do that when we were in the garden. We were in the garden, right? The garden, everything was provided. So what you ate gave you exactly what you needed. Just look at your pets. You give them one kind of food and you can see it immediately. Pets are so awesome, poor pets, because we do so many things to them. But what happens? You have no problem thinking that if you give your cat or your dog or your fish something and all of a sudden he doesn't look so, his hair looks a little dull, or the fur starts coming off, or they're scratching a lot, or they're more irritable, or they're having a lot of, the cats have a lot of urinary tract infections. Sometimes what's the first thing you think of? Their food. And then what do you do? Oh, we'll put a little squirt of omega-3s in there. And that's going to help it. And sometimes it does. Well, let's get him off of that. He's maybe doesn't do so well with that grain. Let's get him on a no grain diet. Let's get him on this diet, on a that diet. Let's go. And why a no grain diet for a dog, let's say, for a dog? Because dogs don't cook oatmeal. Dogs don't make bread. Dogs eat. They have these giant teeth, even if they're tiny, they've got, for their size, they've got some pretty big teeth. And they're carnivores. They eat animals. They don't make peanut butter cookies. They eat animals. Now, they'll eat anything that's in a garbage can, of course. And they have these little short digestive systems and all these different enzymes that are different than ours that can digest bones. I can pretty much guarantee you that if you ate a bone as big as what my dog can actually eat, we would be very sick. We would not do well because we don't have the enzymes that will digest them the same way that his will. But we have no problem in thinking about that. Our birds, the same thing. Anything. Think of any pet you can, because you look at their outside appearance, or they get sluggish, or they get irritable. They get real barky and or real, you know, just don't want to be around anything. So think about that with you. You're just a little bit bigger and you can just mask things better. It takes a while too for diet. That's the other thing. We carry reserves. So your test today may not be appropriate to compare for your feelings tomorrow because we carry reserves, but then we run out of those reserves. Just like we carry certain hormones. We carry estrogen in our fat cells. We carry all kinds of things in our fat cells. We carry them there. We store them there, not just fat and only fat. We store things so that when we need them, we unlock them. We just let them come out. So it's kind of like that little toilet bowl cleaner thing that turns blue that you put in the back of your toilet bowl, and you just pretty much every time you need to use it, every time you flush the toilet, it's a blue. Well, after a while, it runs out. and it starts getting, but it sometimes runs out very gradually, doesn't it? Instead of the bright blue, it's a little lighter blue, a little lighter blue. Your body kind of does the same thing. So now, even though it should be a no-brainer, the scientists are, of course, always at a mad rush to say, you know, it's always looking at these little tiny details because we've gone so far astray. If we hadn't gone so far astray, the medicine of old was open the windows, you need some fresh air, you need some sunshine, you need food that you can tolerate at the time and slowly build up to good foods. There was a nice understanding of what those foods were, and then people got over stuff. But now we've gone so far astray. We don't have windows we open. We don't think we should open them. And if we do, we're afraid of the pollutants that come in. We can't just go to our tap and drink water because we're afraid of the pollutants that happen there. And we just have to, you know, we read so many things. What diet is good? What diet is good? It's all just, oh, and somebody's getting very rich on these things. So I want to talk about the Mediterranean diet too, not as a diet where you go out and get a book or anything like that, but why it's good. But also, and the paleo too, there's some good things about that. But right now, it was just a couple of days before Memorial Day, May 26, 2016, there was an article, a medical article that was talking about this new scale, this new nutrient scale that rates animal and plant-based foods that are shown to improve depressive symptoms. So they researched this and it was presented in a session in a 2016 American Psychiatric Association meeting. So, you know, this is where, okay, maybe it's news to everybody standing there. At the same time, it's going to be valuable because we live in the world we live in, and sometimes we have to state the obvious. Anyway, so when I read this, it almost gets me because it says there is increasing evidence regarding the crucial role that diet plays in brain health, particularly in the areas of depression and dementia. And that was an assistant clinical professor of psychiatry, a physician at Columbia University stated. The data are very clear and there's a powerful prevention signal when we help our patients eat better. Well, you know, it's like this is giant standing room only of huge, great brains in the field of you know, physicians that somehow that nourishing the brain will help depression. And there's no sarcasm in that because I'm right with them too, because we really get confused. So plant foods are very important. Certain carbs are very important. But key nutrients that we kind of somehow find a way to either supplement the wrong way, we don't understand them, or we just don't eat the foods that are rich in them enough. There are key ingredients, and you can write this down. Give you a second to get a pencil. Long chain omega-3 fatty acids. Now that's been around and being researched for a long time. That's what you're going to get in a good quality, third party tested fish oil. You don't want to just go to the store and pick up a fish oil. It could be contaminated with all kinds of things. So you want to make sure that you've got a really good third-party tested for contaminants fish oil product. And usually you have to do more than just the 1,000 milligram capsule that they talk about. But that's been going around for a long time as far as the research started back 20 some, maybe even longer years ago, looking at it in bipolar and different kinds of other more severe mental diseases. But then they found that it did have an antidepressant effect, also helps kids as well. And it's no wonder because the brain loves fat. The brain needs fat. The myelin, it's called myelin, sheaths of all your nerves. They're a kind of a fatty, lipid-rich things. So we have to have fats. Those are just like key. Magnesium, calcium, fiber, vitamins B1, B9, B12, and D and E. So those are really important for your brain health. I have a little note from Jennifer that says, so I'm eating pizza. It's for my brain. Well, and if you actually make your own pizza, Jennifer, and you use good whole grain breads, and you use actual olive oil, not necessarily the stuff off the shelf that's probably a blender, been sitting there forever, and you use good foods, wow, you will really, really have actually a fairly decent meal. So here we are. When we talk about critical nutrients, there are critical nutrients. In addition to plant sources, animal sources are super important, as I said in the beginning, because some of the nutrients in your diet, such as B12, are predominantly found in meat and other animal products, and they're absolutely critical for brain health. Let me give you just a little clue. When an elderly person comes into the emergency room with dementia or with a sudden onset of hallucinations, and they have no history of schizophrenia or any kind of psychotic depression or anything like that, well, we look for infections first, you know, urinary tract infections, maybe they're not breathing well enough, those kinds of things. But we give them a battery of tests. And one of the things always is vitamin B12, serum vitamin B12 in the body. Why? Because without vitamin B12, you have signs of dementia, signs of psychosis. What happens? Let's say someone's eating all the meat in the world. But if they don't have the intrinsic factor in their stomach in order to get out that B12 and utilize that B12, it's not going to do any good. So see how intricate that is? So we get back, we're going to talk about some other critical nutrients, perhaps the percentages of them as well, and how you can start putting this practically into your life. I am Dr. Michelle. We will see you after the break.
You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.
Dr. Michelle is a Catholic psychiatrist. However, the views and opinions presented by Dr. Michelle are by no means medical advice. Please consult your doctor for official medical guidance.
Welcome back. I am Dr. Michelle. You're listening to me, Dr. Michelle Live, on Dr. Michelle Live. We're walking the road together. DM Live, breadboxmedia.com is my email address. And I'm sorry, DM Live at breadboxmedia.com. And my phone number, 573-4-BREAD-4, 573-4-BREAD-4. So we were talking about critical nutrients. So there are some important nutrients, and then there are some critical. In other words, if you don't have these, you will have brain symptoms. And there are many things that can cause you not to have these nutrients. And you could be eating three meals a day every day and still be deficient in these nutrients, as I said before the break. So I'll read them again. Long chain omega-3 fatty acids. That's what you find in your fish oils that you'll get. However, as I said, you have to be careful. None of these things are created equal. You have to have things that you know the product not only has a good reputation, but that you want to stay away from things made in China, because we find all kinds of stuff in supplements from China, sometimes even prescription medications. So that's a little iffy. There are, in a lot of places, they don't have the same regulations as we might have here. And even if we have them here, doesn't mean that they're good. It just means that we have some regulations, right? I mean, we all know that. The critical nutrients, again, long-chain omega-3 fatty acids, magnesium, calcium, fiber, vitamins B1, B9, B12, D, and E. Now, in there should be vitamin C as well. I don't know why they don't have that, but it should be. So the critical nutrients, vitamin B12 is absolutely critical for brain health. B12, hands down. And the predominant source is meat, organ meat. Any meat. That just is. And there isn't a vegetarian or a vegan around that will not have some kind of problem with vitamin B12. There's a reason for that. Even the strictest, most conscientious, where you mix the proper beans with the proper legumes with the proper grains, still, it is so difficult for the body to get that those nutrients. Let's go to the panda bear. The panda actually has a digestive system of a regular bear, but it sits all day long and eats hundreds of times. It's not hundreds, but lots of times of its own weight. I think it's hundreds in bamboo leaves, trying to extricate because it doesn't have the enzymes necessary to really have that one bite and have their body go, yes, and then just take in all those nutrients. It takes so much for them to extricate. Let's say they might be eating tons of vitamin C, but it was going right through their body. So that in order to pull out what they need for a day, they have to eat a ton of it. So there are a lot of people who swear by, I've known people who've been vegetarian for 20, 30 years. Now, some of them have other issues that you can't say for sure it came from being a vegetarian, but you know, you need this stuff for your nerves to work. So I'm not necessarily saying I'm against them. I'm just saying you got to really be honest about what some of the pitfalls are. So then you also have to know that your goal in your brain is to not only be healthy, but part of the reason it needs to be healthy is you need to make sure that the neuronal membrane is stabilized. And what that means is what I told you before. You have a lot of fat. And again, it's a very lovely, smooth way that it's formed that causes that lightning fast conduction. It's like a wire. It's like a metal wire, a cord, whatever it is. And if it starts to get a little rusty, it doesn't work so well, does it? So you need that anti-inflammatory effect too. So what they found, and this was a little bit surprising to me, because they said that this is the percentage of U.S. population that do not meet the recommended daily allowances for key nutrients. Now, this kind of blew me away. So get your little, think about this. This is the percentage. This was in the 2009 statistics from the U.S. Department of Agriculture showed that most Americans are not getting enough of the critical key nutrients. And here is a study of the percentage of the U.S. population, that's you and me, that do not meet the recommended daily doses for these following key nutrients. 86%, that's huge. 86%, I say it again, of U.S. citizens, U.S. population, do not meet the requirement, the recommended daily allowances, which we say is pretty low anyway, for vitamin E. Really, for vitamin E, 86% of us, for just the recommended daily allowance, which is, we find, sometimes too low anyway to give us what we need in this modern day and age. 75% of the U.S. population, 75% don't meet the requirement, daily requirement for folate. Folate is so important in the fetal development, in your own mental health development. Big one in depression. They have certain actual folate supplements that you can be prescribed in a higher dose that actually is an adjunct, will help in depression. 75%, that just blew me away. 73% of Americans fall short of their calcium, the lowest possible amount of calcium, 73%. Magnesium, 68%, do not meet even the recommended, from the USDA, the recommended daily allowances, and they're low anyway. Zinc, 42%. Zinc is like super important. And you could be taking a multivitamin. They could all be taking multivitamins, but they're falling short on this. Vitamin B6, very important for nerves, 35% of us. Iron, 34% of us. And vitamin B12, 30%. Now, these are the critical nutrients for the brain. In addition to leafy green vegetables, the researchers highlighted the importance of organ meats, game meats, nuts, pecans, walnuts, and peanuts, bivalves, mussels, clams, and oysters, mollusks, octopus, squid, and snail, which I'm sure none of us really are eating. Some of you might be. And fish, salmon, and sardines. Although it is recommended that patients eat 8 to 12 ounces of fish a week, it is important to choose a fish lower in mercury. So that's always our little dilemma, right? We just don't usually, you know, we say, oh, go eat more fish, but then we're worried about the mercury, as we should be. So the focus of this research was on areas of depression and dementia. So that's not even talking about ADHD, anxiety, addiction disorders. See, you know, where do you fall when you have a deficit in the brain? Where do you fall in the outward expression? Maybe you're the depressive one. Maybe someone else in your family is the anxiety prone one. Maybe the other one is ADHD, but it's about not having what your brain, this amazing biochemical, electrobiochemical machine, needs in order to get it running. So this is the fourth year that they've held at the American Psychiatric Association, the symposium on food, and they said this is the biggest draw it has ever had. So, you know, all of a sudden people are waking up, even though people knew it, but, you know, this is way bigger than you just kind of assume it's taking care of itself, but it isn't. And we're seeing the effects now, and it's so easy to get a pill, but what about just eating a regular diet? Nothing fancy, fancy, fancy. I told you, we don't have time today to go on the Mediterranean diet, but I will tell you real quickly, it's really important to know that part of the Mediterranean diet, the reason it is good is because it really goes down to this simple, more sun-filled type diet where you're eating a plethora of colorful vegetables, tomatoes and all these kinds of things, plethora of colorful vegetables. You have the smaller amount of meat, but you have meat. You have salads. You have fresh fruits. And there's cheeses and dairy in there as well. And nuts and olive oil. This is a beautiful diet. It's something that can be incorporated in many different ways. You don't have to go out and get an Italian or a Greek or some Mediterranean cookbook. You can if you want. But try looking at that a little bit more today. We're going to talk about this tomorrow and probably the next day too, because this is very important. And we can talk all day long about the different medications and things, but unless you're actually, it's like with your car, you know, unless you're actually getting to the root of where the deficits are, how you can cover your bases without having to be down with your pencil every single day or down with some kind of calculator in your phone, and talking about how can you do this for you and your family. So real quickly, want to talk a little bit about the risks again of the vegan diet, and lesser to the vegetarian, the biggest is vitamin B12, because it can give irreversible damage to the neurons, as well as lead to depression, anemia, and dementia. So we're going to talk a little bit about that tomorrow, because 52% of the vegan population were deficient, frankly deficient, discernibly deficient in vitamin B12. And 23% had insufficient levels. So we're going to talk about also the vegan mothers, and their 60% of their offspring had developmental delays. So these are the people tested. So we've got a lot we need to talk about. So we're going to talk tomorrow about the diet. If you have any questions about diet, please email me, DMLive, redboxmedia.com. And you can also get ready and text and call tomorrow. We'll see you tomorrow. I am Dr. Michelle. Thank you for walking on this road with me.
You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.